It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are not here. They are in Redmond, Washington, for Microsoft's virtual TechNet conference. And lo and behold, they brought in a big, big name. Jeffrey Snowden joins us in just a few minutes. The father of PowerShell next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 455, recorded Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. Lick the cookie. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet easy-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobo.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT100 to save $100 off a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Plus, with a developer platform, you can customize the code behind any Squarespace design to your heart's content. Enter the offer code Windows and you'll get 10% off Squarespace. You should. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And today, the kids are on the Microsoft campus. So hide the crayons. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. Hello, you two. You having fun?
Hello. Yes, we're having a great time in Redmond.
Yay. You're actually on campus?
We are.
Nice.
We're in a secret bunker location. We can't disclose at the moment.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah.
Did you have to, like, give DNA samples to get in? Or?
Pretty much.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I have to show my passport to get in.
Did you really? No.
Yes.
Well, explain the strange man sitting in between you.
Yes. How does one explain Jeffrey Snowden?
Yes, so we have a special guest here because we're on campus, and it just happens to be Jeffrey Snowden, best known to many as father of PowerShell, but also kind of a big deal on nano server containers and a bunch of other amazing new things happening with Windows Server.
Nice.
You know, you always know it's him because of his tie. It's kind of his distinguishing characteristic.
Really? Oh, he's like well dressed.
Yes.
Yep.
I like that, Jeffrey. Very nice.
Yes.
Hey, it's really nice to meet you. But as I said before the show, thank you for PowerShell.
You're welcome.
Seriously, that's what, in my opinion, turns an operating system from, you know, a consumer front-facing consumer toy to an actual tool, is a command line and a shell, and that's really PowerShell is superb.
You are absolutely correct on both accounts.
Okay. Can I have an amen? So, Paul, you've already done your job. You're drunk now, right? No.
I noticed you put the Thurrott mug below me like it's a dribble glass.
Yeah, just in case. You know, you never know. And I put a little absorbent material in there.
Yep, yeah. Smart. Yeah. I did dump an entire drink on myself last night, so that's smart.
The other day we were taking a client to a dinner, and he started to reach for the check, and I lunged for it so fast I knocked the wine over.
Yeah,
and fortunately dredged myself, not the client. But Lisa then said, you know, you don't have to try quite so hard. It's really not necessary. So, Paul, you did your hosting duties.
No, I didn't actually. So Okay. No, Mary Jo did hers yesterday.
Oh, she did hers. Mm-hmm.
She was awesome.
Oh, thank you.
So it went well.
It went well. I was co-hosting TechNet VC Day 1 with Rick Klaus, who works in Azure engineering.
Fun.
And so we were the hosts for the whole 4 hours of yesterday. It was fun.
When you say host, what is it? Is it you're sitting on a stage in armchairs and people are peppering you with questions, or what exactly?
No, not exactly. So TechNet VC, they had a number of pre-recorded videos on different topics, and we introduced the speakers. Some of the speakers, like Jeffrey Snover, came in after his video played and took live questions from the audience.
So it's like a TV show, kind of.
It is kind of like that.
Yeah. So the Today Show for IT pros.
Pretty much.
And are people watching at home and participating?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. Yep. Oh, that's great.
People were watching all over the world yesterday. They were tweeting pictures to us of where they were watching from. That was pretty cool.
So that explains
why would you watch Oprah when you could watch this?
I agree. That explains the word virtual in the title.
Great. Right.
I get it. Is this the first time TechNet's been done this way?
It may have been. I don't know. Yeah.
I think they bantered the word first yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First virtual conference. What a great way to do it, because then, you know, I always feel sorry for developers, because often these developers conference, Apple hasn't announced the dates of its developers conference. Google doesn't announce ahead of time. Then there's this mad rush. All the tickets sell out within seconds. I mean, that happened to Build, right?
Yep.
And and then you have to, you know, buy airplane tickets the last minute, and it's just
right.
So I like the idea.
I'm just guessing, but I bet the timing of this had something to do with Ignite being pushed back to September, and now there's such a big gap, you know, between the shows. Maybe just to have some virtual event in the middle.
So what is?
They don't talk to me about that stuff.
he's giving me the.
So what
sounds like a great theory?
Yeah. interesting theory, Mr. Thurrott.
Yes.
And TechNet is what?
TechNet is, there's MSDN and TechNet. Those are both sites on Microsoft.
Right. But I used to TechNet's, be a member of TechNet. Yeah.
So TechNet's more focused on the IT pro audience, not developers so much, but more the IT pros, admins, those kind of people who have to worry about things that, you know, I cover. The System Center stuff, Windows Server, Hadoop. All those things.
Yeah. Everybody drink.
Hadoop. It's going to be that kind of show.
Is that the drinking game?
It is. Yeah. It is on our show.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Isn't that
not PowerShell?
I know.
Can we change that today?
Yeah.
No, we got to be able to walk out of here at the end of the show. So.
the problem with PowerShell is it's accessible. You see, you made it too accessible.
Oh, I see.
Hadoop is a mystery to all.
Isn't it, though? I don't know what your problem is, but I know what the solution is.
It has something to do with data. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Guys, how do you want to... I mean, I'm looking at your notes here.
Yep.
Do you want to spend some time with Jeffrey? I think we should. I mean, this is a great opportunity.
It is. Yeah, we were thinking maybe we'll ask him a few questions and then take questions from people watching the show, because we told folks on Twitter he's here, and we're getting tons of questions on Twitter for him.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just shut off the mic and listen. Go ahead. You guys take over.
So we should probably start with the Xbox event in New York next week.
Can't wait. That's so exciting, isn't it, Paul? You got your Elite headset. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Guys.
Sorry.
Yeah. The only thing I'm sad about, and then we'll let you guys. No Man's Sky is on PlayStation 4. I can run it on Windows, but I'm sad.
We'll talk, Leo. We'll talk.
We should talk. Okay, my grieving is over. Now back to the show, already in progress.
Okay, so I want to kick it off for Jeffrey, because it's awesome. He's right here in the same bunker with us. So I wanted to ask him a little bit about NanoServer and server containers, because we talk about them, we write about them, but what would be kind of your elevator pitch to IT pros about why they should care about those technologies?
Yeah. So basically, Windows Server 2016 is re-architected to help maximize, the delivery of value through business applications. Well, what's all that mean? So basically, NanoServer and containers are these extremely lightweight ways for developers to put applications into. So if you want to have an application running in a VM on a physical host, instead of that taking 10 gigabytes in the case of server with a desktop, now all of a sudden it takes 400 megabytes. That's right, 400 megabytes. So it's crazy small. Additionally, it starts up like in a heartbeat. You know how long Windows Server takes to start, right? It takes a while. Well, a Gen 2 VM using Nano Server takes about 2.5 seconds. So that's crazy. Containers, even smaller, even lighter weight. Okay, so the point is that developers are able to take advantage of these great new architectures to do their best work, to develop cloud agile applications. But then they need to partner with developers or with operations in a DevOps workflow to get it deployed, to get it managed, to be able to scale it out and to diagnose it. So that's really what we're doing with containers and DevOps. It's all dramatic re-architecture to help make it easier to build applications and then deploy them, and for the two groups, your developers and your operators, to work together hand in hand.
Nice. Good elevator pitch.
Yeah. And then, of course, I don't know if you know the difference, but if we've had this on the show before, but we support containers and we support the industry standard management for that, which is to say Docker. And so the entire Docker ecosystem of tools will work with our containers. But we have two types of containers. There's what we call Windows Server containers, and these are exactly isomorphic to what you'd find in the Unix world. And then we have Hyper-V containers. Now, Hyper-V containers provide the virtualization, the isolation of a VM. So why does that matter? And the answer is you will use regular Windows Server containers when you have friendly multi-tenancy. So we both work for the same company, and one division and another division are going to have containers, and they need to be isolated. But I don't assume like the other guy is trying to kill me, right, or steal my data or do something evil to me. Now, if you said, hey, I've got, company A and their competitor, and they're going to be hosted on the same machine, then you want maximal isolation, and that you get that through Hyper-V containers. And so that's something than the other guys don't have yet. So we're leading the way.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I was watching your talk yesterday, and it was really interesting to me because you didn't talk about any of this stuff, really. You were talking more about careers and how, change with the times and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting to me from going back to, Monad and when PowerShell was just starting to happen, it was about automating on Windows Server because that was the platform. And today, of course, things are really spread out to the cloud. I mean, how does that impact things for people who are in the IT space now? I mean, instead of looking at it like, oh, we're going to the cloud, I'm losing my job. I mean, what could you say to people who are concerned about that kind of transition today?
Oh, sure. There are some people, as I mentioned yesterday, the crowd that said, oh, well, the move to the cloud, there'll be no operators, right? So there's DevOps, and DevOps is explicitly developers and operators working together, breaking down the barriers to work together to drive business value forward. And I'm so excited by that. There's a small branch of DevOps called NoOps, and NoOps are the people who believe that there will be no operators. And my joke there is, those are all the people that pursue that model until it's 3 a.m. and they get a call, right? Then it's like, well, we should have operators too. Really, I think, some of your largest sites may be that way. Like Bing probably doesn't have operators per se, but most things will. You'll have both devs and operators. So the big difference is that in the past, in sort of the enterprise model, you had this tendency to build, what we call now snowflake servers, right?
I love that. I love this.
Yeah.
So, snowflake is a precious, special thing, and each one's different than the other. And so that's sort of what the whole management gestalt was about, right? A server was a precious thing, very expensive, so you'd stand it up. You'd use RDP to go to it, and you'd handcraft it, and this one was different than that.
You give it a name.
Exactly.
Yep.
Fluffy.
Yep.
and the problem with that is, you might have 10 file servers and each one might be a little bit different. So that's not really what you want to do in the cloud. In the cloud, what you want to do is you want to be able to scale up and you want to be able to scale down and you want it to be consistent, right? So you dramatically increase business throughput by having a repeatable operation, by adding new small changes to that, and then rolling it out. And so automation is absolutely critical to that. So you'll see the best.
Are there any Microsoft technologies that go towards automation in any way?
It turns out. Yeah, so indeed. And yes, PowerShell, of course.
Oh, yes.
It's almost as though we had a vision of the future.
Right.
In fact, if you look at the original PowerShell manifesto, the Monad manifesto, I explicitly talked about what is now referred to as DevOps. I said one of the problems is that we have developers and we have operators, and there isn't a good bridge between them, that the tools are completely different. And when somebody gets in trouble, the other guy just looks and says, sucks to be you. I can't help you. What are you doing?
Yep.
And the explicit goal of PowerShell was to have a tool which bridged the gap between those two.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to hear you talk a little bit about what you're suggesting IT pros do with security threats being on the rise. Because I know this is another hot button for you.
Oh, it is. It is. So I'm so excited by 2016 because we really have redoubled our commitment to securing our customers' sites and their workloads and their data. Of course, you know, we used to not be very good at security, right? And so Bill had his famous trustworthy computing memo. Yep. What's that? Oh, I'm bad with years.
Trustworthy computing. Like,
That was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so there really was, you know, did a security stand down, taught everybody how to write good code. And there has been a continued, consistent and increasing investment in security of our code. And we've gotten really quite good. Well, a few years ago, as we did some technology planning, we looked and we said, hey, the threats have changed, right? We've gotten very good, but the bad guys are getting really good as well. And we became aware of nation states with unlimited budgets attacking our customers. And now the point of this was that, well, they were actually finding real vulnerabilities. And the observation was, well, hey, it's really just a matter of time between, you know, when a nation state discovers this and when the bad guys discover it, and then from the bad guys to the script kiddies. So we really need to up our game. And that's what we did. And so there's a number of things that we did. First was we continue to do what we were doing before, defend, 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 harden, 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 but to a higher level. And so there's fantastic technology in Windows 10 that then we inherit in Windows Server 2016. So I'm thinking Device Guard, Credential Guard, some more esoteric technologies that we don't talk much about, but some of my favorites, something called Control Flow Guard, you know, some deep technical stuff that protects the system. So, you know, really great investments there as well as logging. But then we took a more mature approach to the problem. And we said, hey, no matter how much you protect, things will happen. They will get in. So now we're going to focus in not just on protecting, but on discovering when the bad guys are in your environment, be able to detect them, be able to mitigate and disrupt their attacks, and then be able to kick them out and clean up afterwards.
This is the Defender Advanced Threat Detection technology, I think. That's one of it.
But basically, a lot of it is improving our logging, being able to consolidate those logs, do big data analytics against that, and then some technologies called JIT and GIA. Now, JIT and GIA. So one of the common attacks is, okay, Paul, you're an admin. So they're very sophisticated. I don't know if you've seen what they do, but they'll go look you up on LinkedIn, and they'll see who your coworkers are and what your projects are.
Yeah, because it's a social engineering type thing.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So these are like laser targeted attacks. Hey, Paul, this is Mary Jo. You know, we're going to do this podcast next Tuesday, and I wanted you to review this idea I had. And you click on it, boom, you're owned. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so now that you're an admin, they then take that and this technique they call spidering. So there's some way that they can harvest the credentials on that machine and then use those credentials to get to another machine and harvest, expand. So that works because you're an admin or an admin's been on your box. So what we want to do is we want to reduce the number of people who are administrators or the time at which they're administrators. So those are what JIT and GIA do. JIT is just-in-time admin. So that says, hey, Paul, you're not going to be an admin all the time. We're going to make you admin only at certain times. So now here, you know, I like to say that security is not security unless you deploy it. Okay. So JET, you can get very sophisticated and very fine grain, and some very high, you know, world-class organizations will do that and will get incredible benefit out of it. But the simplest thing, the like rock, you know, easy thing to do is just to say, hey, Paul, what are your hours? Okay. So you're going to work 9 to 5 during the weeks. You're only going to be admin during then, and then not other times. So if a bad guy does get your accounts and tries to hack systems on the weekend, it says, wait, something's wrong here. So that's what JET is. And indeed, I gave you a very simple example. You can be very sophisticated with JET. But then there's GIA. GIA says, hey, I'm not even going to – I'm going to reduce your capabilities. So it says, first, you don't have to be admin. We want to explicitly take away admin privileges from you. You're just a user. But when you connect to these machines, we'll allow you to do these set of tasks as admin. So those are the two technologies. And then, of course, there's shielded VMs. So this is something we've added to 2016 that's crazy exciting. And so basically shielded VMs is – so let's talk about the problem. I take my workloads, my VMs, and I run them at a hoster. And, well, wait. So the hoster has access to my VHDs. So an admin at the hoster could – mount my VHD and look at my data because an admin, you know, here's the problem, right? About 40, 50 years ago, some computer scientists decided there was this thing called an admin, and an admin can do anything, like anything. And that's sort of the model we've been using for the last 40 or 50 years. Now with JIT and GIA, we're revisiting that topic, but that's what an admin can do. So now all of a sudden I've got your VHD, I can look in it, right? And I can analyze it. And if that VHD has an Active Directory, all of a sudden I can get all your secrets. So that seems like a bad idea. Well, that's what shielded VMs do. Shielded VMs basically ensure that the admins of the hoster cannot see the contents of the VHD or the VM. So we protect it. And now here's the other thing. A government agency goes to that hoster and says, hey, I want to see the contents of that. They can say, my friend, with my head and my heart in the right place, I can't help you. I mean, physically, just can't help you. So that's what shielded VMs do. So again, what we're really doing is we're just redoubling our commitment to secure our customers' data and their applications. So it's one of the things I'm very passionate about. And of course, I don't know if you saw PowerShell V5, boy, it turns out, I don't know if you've watched this, turns out that the bad guys have been using PowerShell as part of their attacks. Now, there are two reasons for this. The first is, of course, that they have exquisite taste in technology, just like Leo. But the second is, on a more serious note, they are, I mean, it's sort of legitimate. They are people with lots of things to do. You know, they got places to go, places to attack. And they want to have maximal effect, maximum productivity with the minimum amount of work. And it turns out PowerShell provides that. Now, there's also an issue where PowerShell could perform an operation and we didn't always log everything 100%. We logged like 99.9, but there's one little hole that we didn't log. PowerShell version 5, we just take security to 11. Lee Holmes, now the Enterprise Cloud Group security architect, really focused in on PowerShell in version 5 and wrote a blog about how PowerShell loves the blue team. And he talked about the enhancements to security, transcriptions, logging, really did a great job. And now what we're doing is we're arming the blue teams. Those are the defenders, and now they're able to use PowerShell to defend their sites.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy good.
Can we ask you some of the audience questions? Do you mind fielding a few? John Baxter is asking about when and if OpenSSH is coming to PowerShell.
Yeah, great question, John. So now. You can get it now. So we're doing all that. So for the people who aren't familiar with what's going on here, Microsoft has joined the OpenSSH, I don't know what we call it, some consortium. But, you know, we are a gold member of that. So we've donated money and we've donated resources. And we are working with them jointly to take OpenSSH and make it available on Windows.
I'm uninstalling Cygwin right now. That's it. It's over. That's fabulous.
All right.
Good news.
Isn't it?
But that's the number. It might be the number one thing I do with a command line is SSH to other computers, right?
Oh, well, you are going to be a happy guy because now you'll be able to do two things. One is from your Linux machines, you'll be able to SSH to Windows machines.
Ooh.
So there's a Windows server portion of that. Okay. And then the second is on Windows, you'll be able to SSH to your Linux machines. So both of those are available. Now, again, we're doing this with that community. It's an open source community. And so there's a GitHub repo. If you want, you can join us, look at the code, add some code, issue a pull request if you want. And we are doing regular drops of that, and there are drops available right now. And so it's pretty early days. Not everything's there. And we have a pretty long backlog of things we'd like to do. Eventually, so I'll just say, this isn't a plan, but it's a dream. We'll do everything that you think of when you think Windows and SSH. But we're also looking at perhaps doing PowerShell over SSH. So right now, PowerShell remoting protocol runs over something called WSMAN. That's the DMTF standard for management. And we think that actually we might be able to be faster and more efficient going over SSH. So we'll look at that. And of course, PowerShell works over multiple protocols, so you have a choice. So I don't know if you saw that, but in this version, now PowerShell runs over the VM bus. So what that means is you can be on a host and you can do PowerShell remoting to a VM with you can remove all the NICs in the VM. I mean, that's just crazy. So you should try this. You just say enter PS session minus VM name, and then you're there, and then go and remove all the NICs, and it keeps working.
Let's see what happens.
I don't even want to know. That sounds like a dangerous thing to do. I don't.
It's like the time you rebooted during the show, Leo.
Yeah. And let me just see what happens if I remove all the NICs. Jeffrey Sellers.
Actually, I did something like that in one of my early PowerShell demos. I talked about how important minus what if was. And so I did this, get all the processes, pipe it to stop process. And I meant to type, see, now that could be bad. And that's why you want to type minus what if. But I forgot to type minus one if before hit carriage return.
Oops.
It turns out if you want to reboot your machine, just kill LSASS.
Oh, yeah.
700 people in the audience, doesn't matter. We're going down.
Q in the chat room, QUU has a question about PowerShell going multi-platform. Is there any plan to do that? Because I would love to see that.
There is no announcement at this point in time, but I will tell you that as part of going to Nano Server, 400 megabytes, how do you get an operating system, Windows operating system, running on 400 megabytes? And the answer is you throw some stuff away, right? You throw away the GUI stack. That's the most important thing. You throw away side-by-side. Side-by-side is the stuff when you try and install something. You ever notice when you install a feature, Windows never says, please insert the media? That's because everything you could possibly want to install is there in something called a side-by-side directory. Well, and then we just copy it over. But we get rid of that, and we got rid of full.NET. So we have core.NET or .NET Core. Now, PowerShell runs on full.NET. So to run PowerShell on NanoServer, we had to port it to .NET Core. And, of course, everyone knows that .NET Core is portable.
Like Xamarin style.
I don't know about Xamarin style, but yes, indeed. So they've got .NET Core running on Linux. And that's not generally available yet, but you can kick the tires, and then I'll say I have nothing to announce today.
Nice. Linux, thank you. Linux, good answer. Good answer.
I will point out that Jeffrey's PR handle looks concerned.
But I will tell you that, like, let's talk. I always like to talk about motivations and less about plans, because plans change every day. You know, I got to have a plan to do something. I'm going to come in tomorrow, and a new opportunity or a new problem shows up, and that plan changes. But motivations don't. Okay, motivations stay constant. So here's our basic model. We believe that the world gets better the more you compute. Okay, we just believe that. That's a deep-held belief. Now, we believe that people's natural level of computing is thwarted by friction. In the past, that friction used to come from money. Servers were expensive, right? Now, servers aren't really expensive, right? Servers are inexpensive. Virtual servers, very inexpensive. And cloud servers, very, very inexpensive, right? Because you only pay for them while you use them. So now there's replace this monetary friction with a management friction. oh, okay, so I can stay at the server, but then I got to do this, and I got to do that, and I got to do this, and I got to do that, I got to do this. We believe that if we can eliminate that friction, people can consume their natural level of computing. We believe that the more people compute, we're getting really good at turning that computing into business advantage, and everybody benefits. The customer benefits, and we will benefit. So it's in my interest, and I've had explicit conversations with the execs about this, my mission is to make it easy for people to consume their natural level of computing, whether that's Windows or Linux. We're going to benefit the same. So that's the thing I'm not sure everybody's got the memo on, right? So in the context of Azure, right, I make more money if you have 10 instances of Linux, 10 VMs of Linux, than if you have like one instance of Windows. It's a volume game. So what we want to do is we want to enable the customers wherever they are to consume whatever they want and consume as much of it as that makes sense for their business. So obviously we want to be able to simplify the management to make it easy to manage anything from anywhere. Now, that's my motivation, and then you can connect the dots, and there's timetables, and there's resourcing, and et cetera, and things always take a little longer than you want because you got to get the quality and the security high, but you can connect the dots. That make any sense?
Yeah.
Yep. It did.
I'm connecting dots right now. Don't bother me.
I have to throw in a System Center Configuration Manager question for you.
Great.
Christian Lehrer asks, any news on how, if, or when this SCCM will use DSC, desired state configuration?
No.
Okay.
How's that for an answer? No, the answer is, so I'm all things server and system center. We actually broke into two. So there's the server-oriented system center stuff, which we have in our division, and then there's the more device-oriented system center stuff, which SCCM is. And so really, I'll let them speak for that. I don't want to speak for them. I mean, clearly we've had conversations, but I'll let them speak for themselves.
I don't want to take up too much of your time.
Take up more of his time. Questions. Come on.
Is it okay? Can we keep
Jeffrey, yeah, how long can we keep you?
A while longer.
Okay. You know what? When you're done.
Until the PR person. If you see the PR person with a hook.
Gives you the hook.
Clearly. Yeah.
All you got to do, take off your headset, slam it down, and walk out. That's all you have to do, and we'll stop talking to you.
Okay.
Simple enough.
Yeah. Do you want to ask one? Okay. So I know there's two different models. There's the Microsoft Cloud model, Azure, and then you have the virtualization model.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So if you're explaining to our listeners what the difference is, like what do you really need to know about the difference, what would you say?
Yeah. So indeed, that's a thing I think we could get clearer on, and we really should have a white paper to explain it in detail. But here's the thing you want to walk away with. Virtualization is different than the cloud. I mean, we've always said, hey, we believe virtualization is a stepping stone to the cloud. Now, as we look at it a little bit more, we think, yeah, it is. But in reality, we think people are going to have both for a long time. Yeah. So that's why with Azure Stack, where we take Azure and we allow you to run Azure on your data centers, you know, in your data centers, on your servers, or in a hosted data center, that is the cloud model, right? Because we firmly believe the cloud is a model, not a place. And in Azure Stack, we're not using System Center to manage it. Now, in our previous effort of virtualization, we have System Center. And a lot of people say, oh, does this mean you're giving up on System Center or you're stopping System Center? And of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. And you're going to see some really crazy, exciting announcements when we talk about the next version of System Center. But System Center, we use that for some private cloud things and continue to use it. It turns out that when you do the cloud, you know exactly what you want to do. The great thing about System Center is it's a general purpose tool. You can do almost anything with it. Azure has a particular model. It does things a particular way. And so having a handcrafted fabric controller to implement that policy gives you great efficiency and lower latency. And so that's why we're pursuing that. So anyway, the key walkaways are cloud and virtualization. They're two different models, and we expect most companies are going to adopt both. And System Center has a fine future.
Okay. I mean, is there a if we use a tipping point of sorts on the cloud, I mean, I don't know that server development has slowed down per se. I mean, we're really only 4 years past the last major release, so it's kind of on schedule, if you will. But it seems like more and more feature-first cloud, tie it back to on-prem when it makes sense. On-prem doesn't go away, but maybe it becomes a smaller piece of the overall chunk. Is that accurate?
No, I wouldn't quite say that. But you are correct in the observation that some things are being developed in the cloud first and then brought on-premise. So what you're seeing is it's sort of back and forth. Before, you know, sort of more one way than the other. Now I think it's pretty good even
circle,
mix.
Kind of.
Yeah, you can think of it a virtuous circle. I sort of think of it as like a teeter-totter. You know, some things are developed here and brought up there.
Sure.
So let's give an example. Yeah. So, of course, Azure is built upon Windows Server, okay? And so we're doing a bunch of great innovations in Hypervisor. So we're picking up nested virtualization.
Yeah, they feedback.
It's wonderful stuff. And so that's being done here, and then they'll pick that up. There are things we're doing that they won't pick up, like rolling cluster upgrades. So rolling cluster upgrades is the ability to say, hey, I'm on this version, and I want to go to the next version, and I don't want to have any outage. So that's something we do using failover clusters. Azure does not use failover clusters. Their cluster size, failover clusters goes to like 64 nodes. Azure has like, I don't know, hundreds of nodes. Okay, sure. So they have a different a way of doing things. But like the networking, Azure did the networking stack, the software-defined networking stack and the software-defined load balancer. We're taking that exact code, and now we're bringing that on-premises, and we're shipping in the next version of server. So that's something that went the other way. And then there's things where, well, we inform each other, but we end up with different implementation. And storage is a great example there. The Azure storage guys have just amazing technology. But when you look at the details of their design center, you know, if I asked Rusinovich the other day, I said, well, hey, when you guys buy storage, you know, what's the minimum storage stamp you have? And he said, what was the number? It's like 20 racks. 20 racks of disks. I was like, okay, so how many of my, that's a minimum, right? That's like the algorithms are tuned for that. So obviously that's not going to work for most of my customers. But we went and looked at that design, and we have a different implementation of that. And we call that Storage Spaces Direct. So there we have a different implementation, but we've learned a lot from them.
Okay. I mean, it's hard to look at something like nano servers and containers and think this happened because of the cloud. You know, it will benefit on-prem, obviously, but it's one of those things that just seems this was really influenced by the needs of these really scalable environments.
Oh, sure. Let's be clear. You know, Windows Server 2016 is a deep re-architecting of the server to, you know, do great in the cloud and sort of this app-centric world. And that's one of the things that's so exciting about the cloud is it allows you to focus in on the applications because it's the applications that drive your business forward. You know, like I'm always sort of amused by some of these other open source, you know, cloud projects. And I asked myself, you know, well, hey, how does having one of your developers like contributing to an open source project to do bare metal provisioning, does that really help you sell more, you know, burritos? Right. Does that help you sell more? You know, I'm not thinking so. And so that's, I think I talked about in my talk yesterday about this core versus context, you know, core of those things that drive your business value forward. The cloud's so exciting because it allows you to focus your best people and the maximum amount of your energy on the things that drive your business forward. And all those context things, you just say, yeah, of course I need a VM. Of course I need a virtual network. Give me one. And then we do that for you.
Right, right.
Might make me eat more burritos.
Yeah.
I have one last awesome question.
This has to be the last question because it's so awesome. I don't know the meaning of this question.
That's how awesome it is.
Carmen asks, which cookie Jeffrey Snover is thinking about licking next?
What?
I think that sounds very I don't.
It seems like it's somebody who knows you somehow.
Is he a cookie licker?
Well, let's talk a little bit about that in power.
Okay.
Okay, so in the past, PowerShell was a general purpose scripting language. You could do anything with it, right? And I mentioned to you, we focused in on DevOps. The reality is that we were more focused towards the operators than the devs. PowerShell version 5, we kind of rebalance things. There's a number of features for developers. So we have classes, we have remote debugging. If you're a developer and looked at PowerShell and said, yeah, it's not for me, look at PowerShell version 5. You're going to love PowerShell version 5. So, of course, it's a general purpose scripting language and tool. But the big change is now we're saying, in addition to that, we are going to take on and solve specific problems. Okay, we're going to take on and solve the problem of configuration management. In the past, you could do whatever you want, and, well, hey, maybe those people will solve configuration, or maybe those people. Turns out they weren't solving the problem. So we're picking up that problem, and we're going to solve configuration management using PowerShell through something we call desired state configuration. So I licked that cookie. Then I looked at things.
Aha. Uh-huh.
These are not good cookies.
Then I said, hey, you know, if you take a look at the experience of Windows, often what you're doing is you're going and gathering the various pieces and stitching it together to build a system. And in reality, that's kind of a hard task. It's a bit of a scavenger hunt. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to lick that cookie. I'm going to solve that problem. And so we're introducing something called package management. And package management is a package manager manager. And so I can go from Windows and I can say, get me this, get me this, get me this. In fact, okay, a little preview. Can I do a little preview?
Yeah.
I'll do a little preview.
Take the handcuffs off, Jeffrey. Okay.
This might end badly. But in our next technical preview of Windows Server, what you're going to be able to do from Nano Server is we're taking the Windows Server roles and features and we're putting them in the cloud. And so you'll be able to sit there on Nano Server and say, hey, I'd like IIS, and please get me that. And we'll go get the latest version of IIS, fully patched, et cetera, and install it on your box. So, boom, lick that cookie. I'm solving the scavenger hunt problem, making it easy to get all the components you want on your system, rock easy. And then lastly, the idea of test, right? So here's the problem. You're an admin. And you just patched. You did patch Tuesday. When do you get to go home?
Never.
I don't know. Never. No, I don't know. So, you know, the answer is, like, a lot of people will try a couple things and then they'll hang out by the phone for a few hours. And if it doesn't ring, yeah, I guess I can go home. Well, that's not a good world. I want to have a much more confidence in the system. And so I'm going to lick that cookie. And that's called test management or operational validation testing. So here's where we, again, reached out to the community. You know, this is a very different Microsoft. We reached out to the community. This is actually the first example of this, where we reached out to the community, took an open source project called Pester, and now we're shipping that as part of Windows. And then we're going to encourage everyone, we're going to do it, we're going to encourage our third parties, we're going to encourage our customers to write these operational validation tests, which basically says, hey, make sure this thing's running. Tell me if it isn't. So then the idea is, oh, I make a change. I do a patch, I change the configuration, I add something. And then when do you get home? Do you get to go home? And the answer is, run a couple thousand tests. If they all work, guess what? You get to go home. If they all fail, probably ought to stick around for a while. So we want to engineer confidence into the system. So again, step by step, I guess I'm licking these cookies, right? We're shifting from a general purpose, we help you solve the problem, but you got to solve the problem your own, to saying, no, we're going to take responsibility. We will solve that problem for you. It's part of what I say is the deep re-architecting of Windows Server. And by the way, don't be afraid. If you're a Windows Server guy, don't be afraid. Like, if you're used to dealing with Windows Server, the way you're used to working with it continues to be available. But we have a fundamental re-architecting of the server. This is going to last us through many, many years. And as Paul mentions, it is the stuff that enables us to go very fast in the cloud, to be very efficient, and to really drive businesses forward. So blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm licking all those cookies.
Like, cloud-based installation of roles and features is, in fact, the next cookie you're going to lick.
That is the next cookie. I have licked that cookie. You just haven't seen how soggy it is yet.
Nice. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us. It's really been nice to talk to you and see you and meet
so
you.
So great to meet you, Leo.
Yeah, thank you.
I can't believe this hasn't happened yet. I
can't either. I know. Yep.
Felt like it had. Okay.
You're too busy talking to Rusinovich all the time.
he does kind of hog the stage.
It's about the novels. You need to write a few novels, Jeffrey, and then then we'll talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Father of PowerShell, Jeffrey Snover, and Microsoft Technical Fellow. And we just had a little virtual tech net right here. Just like
kind of did.
Yes. Yeah. That was awesome.
I think I'm going to take the rest of the day off then. It seems like I don't need to do anything for the rest of the show.
No, you can go home.
Right?
Show's over.
I meant the virtual show.
I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. When we come back, there is other stuff.
There is.
Yeah, lots of it. I'm seeing a whole rundown of things you guys want to talk about, including big bomber news. We haven't had any bomber news in a while.
Well, this one is awesome, Leo.
Our show today brought to you by this. I have it right here. It's hooked up. I love my Drobo. Actually, this is the Drobo Mini. There's so many different Drobos now. We first got to know Drobo when they came out with just this. Really, it was like this super cool thing. It was this massive USB drive you could put all your stuff on. And get the benefit of, you know, redundant drives without the complexity of RAID 5. It could handle all the junk drives. This is kind of why I like Drobo. They probably don't want me to say it this way, but, you know, we all have drives lying around. Drobo allows you to use heterogeneous, you know, mixed drives inside the Drobo enclosure. You know, if you do in a RAID 5 enclosure, the smallest drive becomes the default for all of them. Drobo was the first to just add them all together, but you still get data redundancy. And notice I don't even have it fully populated. I have an empty slot here, but still it works great. They've got so many different – this is the Drobo Mini, which I have for like kind of – because it's portable. So I can put all my photos on it. If you're a videographer, it's great. Just over 2 pounds, up to 8 terabytes, and – this is something they've done with the 5D and the Drobo Mini that I really like. I need a coin to show you this. Here we go. Here's a dime. And on the bottom here, you'll see they have a slot. This is so cool. An mSATA SSD acceleration bay, which really makes a difference in small file reads. So you can have slower drives in here. But if you're using Lightroom or anything image library software, anything that does a lot of individual file reads, this accelerates it like crazy. Now, as I said, 8 terabytes. The 5D is the desktop version of this with space for 5 3.5-inch drives. That means up to 64 terabytes of storage. The front panel on the Drobos light up, and they tell you everything that's going on. When a drive starts to get full, you'll know because there's lights all around it. When it's rebuilding, you'll know. Well, I put it in upside down. That's first thing to do. Put it in right side up. It's magnetic, so it's really easy to pop off, and you can add a new drive even while the drive in operation. Hot swappable. So you run out of capacity. They even have a legend on the back here, so you know exactly what action's required by the lights on the front. Take a look at the 5N. This is network-attached storage from Drobo. Media server, file server, backup solution. You just plug it into your switch or your router, and it's done. You're ready to go. The apps let you back up data to 2 different cloud service providers. I like this. You could sync via BitTorrent Sync. I've been using this lately for my server, my Minecraft server files. Just BitTorrent Sync is such a great way to keep them backed up over the cloud from the 5N. A full LAMP stack on the 5N, Node.js, WordPress. It also supports C and C++, Go, Perl, Python, Ruby. This is not just a drive. This is a computer, a headless computer on your network that you can do a lot of great stuff with. You can even use Git to host your own repo right there on the 5N. Or use it as a home media server. Put Plex on it. Just love it. Data on all Drobos is protected, even if there's a sudden power loss, even if it's not yet written to disk. Even better, Drobos have an internal eUSB device where data is copied if there's a power failure to prevent against long outages. It's expandable. See, now it's booted up so I can see that I have green on all 3 drives. That means there's plenty of capacity left. You can add or replace drives in your Drobo easily. No tools required. You just pop them in, pop them out. It's not RAID. It's beyond RAID. So you can mix and match, as I mentioned, expand on the fly. And it's fast. On the back here of the Mini, USB 3, and on the 5N, gigabit connections. And here, look at this, dual Thunderbolt ports. So I'm getting fast. This is how I use it at home. I use my Corning optical cables with Thunderbolt 3. So I've got super speed. This is as good as fast as an internal drive, but it's massive. All right, enough about this. Go to Drobo, drobo.com/twit to learn more. Check out the line of products. They got a ton of great stuff. And on any of them, the Drobo Mini, the Drobo 4-Bay, or the Drobo 5N, you'll get $100 off when you use the offer code TWIT100. So remember that, TWIT100 at drobo.com/twit. It's little things like just like this locking power cable. You can't, once you lock it in, it won't get pulled out. You don't want your drives to suddenly die. They do it so nicely. They've really put a lot of thought in this. They get better every iteration. Drobo.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT100. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott, rubbing his eyes because he's so very tired after his long, exhausting, grueling day at Virtual TechNet. Right?
I'm so tired, I'm crying.
He's boo-hooing. Oh, come on. You're having fun at TechNet, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to do the last day.
No, it's today. It's the second of 3 days. I'm just doing some closing remarks with Brad Sams.
Oh, fun.
And I'm going to try to get a Nerf gun so I can abuse Brad during the show. We'll see how that goes.
That should be awesome.
They won't let us fly the drone inside the studio for some reason, so I'm going to have to go to handheld weapons instead.
Is Sachin Adela at the event, or is he around?
I don't think so.
No, it's not. No. This is like for the geek event.
It is.
Yeah. Although I think if Steve Ballmer were around, you might be shooting some hoops.
Yes.
What's the story?
So Steve Ballmer, you may have heard, owns a basketball team.
Yes.
And I assume that this video was recorded during a halftime thing, but he actually came out and did a dunk off one of those trampolines. And I play basketball every week. I can hurt myself just bending over to pick up a ball. You know, you could seriously injure yourself running at a basket full speed like he does. You got to play this video. It's incredible.
I'm trying to find the video.
It's the link right below the picture.
Oh, okay.
At the top.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer. The one that says Steve Ballmer is the man.
Yes,
oh, it's a tweet. Oh, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, wait. Now play. Turn the sound up, though. You got to hear
who
the
says white men can't dunk. Now that's halftime entertainment, folks.
I'm sorry. I just want to go on record. I miss this guy.
He had enthusiasm.
I love him.
It's kind of a different Microsoft, but I'm sure the Clippers fans love him. Whatever that Clipper mascot is, whatever weird animal that is.
They got to do a celebrity death match with him and Mark Cuban sometime.
Oh, man. That would be hilarious. Oh, boy. That would be good.
All right. That's good. Thank you.
It's good stuff.
But good. And let the former CEO roundup continue. Mary Jo Foley has Bill Gates gossip.
I do. I posted a picture on Twitter from Seattle this week that those watching the video stream might want to see. I am staying at a hotel.
I love this picture. Oh, I was wondering where this. I thought, do they have that on the Microsoft campus?
No, they should.
Before you show the picture, my thought was that, like any U.S. president, Bill Gates must have received gifts from all around the world.
Ah.
And that somewhere there should be a museum that just displays these gifts. And one of them would have been this insane painting, which Mary Jo has a picture of.
Wow. Wow.
So I walked right by this painting and I didn't notice it. And the person I was with said, wow, did you see that painting? And I went back and I just stood next to it. And then she snapped my picture.
You kind of look like your eyes are locking. I see some passion. Yeah.
You know what I think of when I see this painting? I think of smells like naval victory.
So for those not watching, it's Bill's head, but he looks like Lord Nelson. There's the name.
I just want to point out, you both have the same expression on your face and the same haircut.
And the same glasses.
You know,
and Bill's looking right at you.
Yeah.
We do not have the same money, unfortunately, but we have other things.
No,
do his eyes follow you as you walk through the room?
No, but it kind of felt like that.
Yeah.
like a Scooby-Doo show or something.
Yeah.
Do you have? Do you own any sashes?
Not.
Medals of any kind?
No. Yep. No.
Track medals? Exactly. Anything?
Amulets? Is that the word?
No. Anyways, that's our former CEO roundup.
There you go. That is a there is
what
a company
has Satya Nadella done recently?
Yeah, really.
No, right?
Huh? Has he dunked? Can Satya dunk? Are there any portraits of him?
He does play cricket, so who knows? He
wow. I forgot. He's really into cricket, isn't he?
See, Ballmer would posterize that guy.
There's a company that makes those paintings, but they're not that big. They do them with your pets as well.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
No, this is in this hotel downtown. There are a bunch of paintings. There's one like this of Jimi Hendrix. It's one artist who's doing this in a series.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
It's not good.
Oh. All right. What else?
Back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yes. TechNet, Windows 10.
Windows 10.
Windows 10. I've heard of that. I just got an update now to 15.11.
Yep.
And by the way, Paul, I just want to report.
Yep.
Came in, turned on the Surface Book. I have witnesses.
Yep.
Sat there frozen, blue screen with my name on it, nothing. Couldn't control alt delete. Started to heat up. I thought, oh my! It was like flash. It was like PTSD flashbacks.
I know.
So I, you know, there's no reset button. You just have to press and hold the on/off switch for like an hour, and then it finally goes. Oh, okay.
12 seconds later.
Yeah. Feels like longer.
Yeah, no.
It feels like a very long time.
It does feel like by the end of it, you're like, seriously, please.
Well, you can't really tell. You have to listen for the fan to stop whispering.
Right.
And this kind of. And then I turn it on again. It was fine. But I immediately applied 15.11, not wondering, maybe the flip update to 15.11, wondering
it's
if.
A new version. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this related?
Yeah.
No. Have you? How's your Surface Book been?
Mine's been fine. Although I will say I was on an insider preview build and I had a different lockup problem where you'd bring it out of sleep. The Surface logo would pop on the screen and then it would just sit there. And so I contacted Microsoft and I was like, you know, given the rich history I now have with them and Surface, I wanted to see if there was an official response to this. But in the time it took them to get back to me, I said, you know what? I'm going to give these guys the benefit of the doubt. I am on an insider preview build.
Right.
Let me go back.
Fair enough.
To RTM, which I did. Jeffrey was talking about a cloud-based install of roles and features for server. There's a similar feature for Surfaces, by the way, where you could do a cloud-based restore. Uh-huh. So you don't have to download the Surface restore image.
Right.
Because if you want to go back to RTM and you've gone to Insider, you might have lost that image on the machine. You can install it from the cloud. So I did that. And it's been fine ever since. And most of the feedback I've gotten since then has been positive. I do hear from people who say this hasn't fixed anything. I think that type of thing is going to happen. But overall, for me, it's worked really, really well.
All right. Well, it is just once. It could just be things happen.
Sure. Something happened, Leo.
Something happened.
Yeah.
So what is the update? Is this – it's not Patch Tuesday. It was.
No, it's not Patch Tuesday. No? No, it's the second Tuesday, right? Patch Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. So next Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the second cumulative update they've done to the shipping version of Windows 10, which today is 15.11, the November update, right? Where they've documented it thoroughly, right? So they're starting to explain, here's all the stuff that we fixed. There are no new features in this update, and it doesn't install like a build. We have the, the circular progress bar.
Right. No.
It goes very quickly.
Yeah.
It increments the minor part of the build number to 122 from, I don't remember, 107 maybe, I think, in the previous version. There's a short laundry list of feature or I should say of fixes, but no new features.
Yeah, I have 15.11 build 10.586.122. Yeah,
that's right. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that and this is a little confusing because since Windows 10 has shipped, and actually before Windows 10 shipped, we've had the Insider program, and the Insider program has various rings. And those rings provide various pre-release builds of the OS to those people who are testing it. This is not one of those things, right? Uh-oh. This is a build that has gone out to the the public shipping version, a normal consumer who would never join the Insider program will get this update.
Does that look familiar? General failure. Please click here to troubleshoot the X on the screen. That's the eject screen, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's it. Yeah. This is what used to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Diggity.
So, by the way, I talked to a guy for the Microsoft Store. Were you there for this conversation?
No.
So, okay, this is actually, it's funny. I didn't put this in the notes. I should have. I said, listen, he told me he works at the store, and he talked to me.
Oh, the guy who came to our meetup?
Yeah.
That guy.
And he was telling me that they swap out Surface Pros, 4s, and Surface Books. And I said, look, okay, let me ask you a question. Is there a policy at Microsoft where if someone comes in with one of these new machines and you can't fix it, you just swap it out for free, and no questions asked? And he said, actually, we basically just have that policy anyway. Like, this is not new to this. He says, that's what we do. So if someone comes in with – if your Surface Book can't be fixed, like if you reinstall Windows and that doesn't do it, Microsoft Store will probably just swap it out for you for free.
Hmm.
And this kind of ties back to what I was saying.
Will they give me my money back?
No.
Because I'd really, at this point, prefer something else. No, seriously.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, I don't think they'll do that. No. I mean, you bought that thing right up front, right?
When, yeah.
But you know what?
And you didn't...
Not everybody is having problems with this, right?
So maybe a swap would fix it.
Maybe swapping it out would fix it.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah. I ejected it and put it back on, and the X went away.
We don't know what the numbers are, but of 100% of Surface Book and Surface Pro for customers, some percentage are experience problems, right? Let's just say it's 50%.
100% of Leos.
Yes, and 100% of Pauls. And it's been implied to me, but they'll never say the number, but it's been implied to me it's a small number, but I don't know. Let's say it's 50%.
Yep.
Of the people who had problems when they apply this firmware update, some percentage, it fixes everything and everything's great. And I bet that's a big number, a really big number. And I base that on the feedback that I get from people, because I have heard from some people say, look, it didn't fix anything. So 10%, 20%, whatever it is, there's some percentage where this is not fixing it. I think that there will be further firmware updates that will maybe address some of those issues. Mm. But I think in some cases it really is that hardware issue.
Yeah.
It's an Intel chipset thing. And the answer is you just got a bad batch for some reason, right, and it's the way it is. And swapping the machine out will fix it. It's worth a try.
This happens to every manufacturer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just Microsoft.
But this podcast isn't called Dell Weekly, so we tend to notice it a little more when it's a Microsoft.
I mean, I usually – but that's the thing. This is the first – obviously, anybody, first time we've bought a Microsoft laptop. And I've bought many Dell laptops. Many, many, many.
Leo, seriously, on my Surface Pro – Surface Book, rather, when that power management stuff works, it really is like magic. It's wonderful. And – after last week's show, I went and because I don't feel like I explained last week properly the whole power management story. And I wrote an article last week based on information from Microsoft and from Intel, multiple sources, about what is different about Surface Book and Surface Pro 4 power management compared to previous versions of Windows and previous chipsets. And it really is this desire that Microsoft had to make power management work the way that the app model does in Windows 10, which is like a smartphone. This thing is designed – that power management level that's built into Silver Lake, which is brand new, allows the chipset to function like a smartphone and be very aggressive about power management and come out of sleep instantaneously and do that thing where – previous chipsets supported it, but it's more efficient, where it can kind of come on a little bit in the background, download updates while you're sleeping or whatever, and then you turn the thing on in the morning and it's all up to date. It's a hard computer science problem.
Yeah.
I guess this is the phrase we're using.
And it is.
Yeah.
And it is.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or I could just buy a BlendTech blender and just jam it in there and see if it'll.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See what happens. See what happens.
Actually, the page views off of that might be enough to
justify
your money back.
Get my money back. Yeah.
Sure.
Hey, though, we should talk about the phone build since that has the same number.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The build we were just talking about.
Okay. Adding to the confusion.
Right.
Microsoft today released that same build for phones, but it released it to the fast ring and the slow ring, I think, right? Both rings?
Yeah.
For Windows Insider. So it's not a public build. Now, someone asked me on Twitter right before the show, so wait a minute. If it's on the fast ring, does that mean it only goes out to certain phones? And the answer to that one is actually yes, right? So you know that the fast ring builds are on Redstone.
Hold on. It's on the slow in the release preview, not fast.
Oh, it's not fast.
Nope.
Oh. Okay, that actually means that anyone should be able to get it. So someone told me that. So in other words, let's say you have a phone that's not on the. Somebody told me they could, and I couldn't on my own phone because I'm on the fast ring, right? So I checked for updates and it didn't appear.
Right.
And someone just told me that the trick is to put your phone on the slow ring.
It
and
is.
You'll get it.
That's what it says in the blog post. Yep.
Oh, it says in the okay. Yep. So unfortunately, this happened just as we were starting. I haven't had time to.
Yeah.
To read,
but it's mostly fixes, also, right? Just, I mean,
it's all fixes,
not
yeah.
Features.
No new features. Yeah. There's some theory that this is, you know, maybe the build that will go up publicly for people on Windows Phone 8.1 when they do the public upgrade. I think it's fair to say that very Jonas to the emoticon thing.
Yeah.
When it will be this or a slightly newer version of this,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. February 29th came and went, which was the rumored date we were going to start getting. The Windows 10 mobile.
I mean, arguably today is February 31st.
Is it? Okay. Good to know.
Well, will tomorrow be February 32nd?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And it will go like that until this thing ships. So, they're not going to miss February, Leo. It's
no.
not happening.
No.
No. No,
no. Okay.
But there's bigger news than this.
There's,
I think.
It's Xbox One news.
No, before that.
Even before that?
No, because we have some news about the developer bridges.
Developer bridges.
Bridges.
Remember we thought we were going to have to wait until build to find out what was going on with the bridges.
Yeah.
But the day after Microsoft bought Xamarin, they put out a blog post with updates on the bridges. And so the biggest news in that blog post was, yes, you were all right. The Android bridge is dead.
Oh.
They finally confirmed that that is the case.
I mean,
we knew it, but I mean, they hadn't said it publicly until that date. And the reason they gave for it being dead was it was confusing to developers to have the iOS and the Android bridge both. And that if you want to bring mobile apps over to Windows 10, you should use the iOS bridge.
Liars. Liars.
I'm just saying that was the official answer.
Yeah. That's not why.
They also gave us an update on Centennial, which is the bridge for bringing Win32 apps into the Windows Store. And they said this is already in testing with some developers now, which we didn't know. But then right after we heard this in the blog post, we found out that the Office team has developed a Centennial version of Office that is in testing. And there will be an early iteration of the tools for Centennial soon, with more developers invited into the preview. So there are the four bridges. Android's dead now. Westminster, which was the bridge for bringing web apps to Windows 10, shipped and is out, and people are using that. iOS bridge, moving forward. They're expanding the program for that. And Centennial is moving forward. So now there are three big bridges left.
And then there were three.
Exactly. Mm.
and Android's dead now. Words,
yep.
Words they would love to hear in Redmond, but.
Sure. So the real problem with the Android thing, of course, was it worked too well.
Really? Right? Is that true?
Because the Android apps just ran on Windows Phone.
Oh.
You got to remember bridges, because the point of the bridges is to get developers to bring apps to the Windows Universal App platform.
Right.
Just running Android apps on Windows Phone doesn't help, because remember, Microsoft doesn't care if you buy a Windows Phone, right? Microsoft cares. If Windows platform apps have enough machines to run on, right? They want the billion devices. Just running Android apps on Windows Phone doesn't help Microsoft. I mean, it would actually technically help Windows Phone users. But this is kind of contrary to their goals with the platform, right?
Right.
This freaked them out from what I heard. And that was the end of that.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
But you do have to ask yourself, are there any Android apps that are not also on iOS that you want on Windows 10?
Yeah, but no. I mean, you have to ask yourself if you're a developer of an Android app and there was this excellent bridge
By the way, this may not be clear to people, but the way that these bridges was implemented was completely different, which is the confusion thing that they were talking about. So the iOS bridge, you have to bring an Objective-C project into Visual Studio, and you know some of it is going to work fine, some of it won't, because obviously if you're making certain system calls to iOS that don't exist on Windows and don't have an alternative, there's some hard coding you're going to have to do. The Android thing was very different. I mean, you basically just brought the app onto the platform, and you could add things like live tile support and Cortana support and sort of Windows Phone specific features. But architecturally, a Windows Phone is an Android phone, and so as it turns out, that thing just runs. And so, from the perspective of a developer, if you could go to a developer and say, "Yeah, you might have an iOS and an Android app, but your Android app will just run," and with minimal effort, you could add support, you know, through for live tiles and things like that. I mean, it would be kind of a no-brainer for a developer to do that, but it subverts the universal app platform because there's no incentive for that developer to re-architect the code as a universal app.
One more thing related to this. On the Android apps only would run on Windows phones, not on
only
Windows
on
10
phones.
PCs.
That's true.
And so if you want to support this universal Windows platform, it has to be able to run everywhere. And the reason it could only run on phones was it required this Android, what do they call that, subsystem, right, that works like an emulation layer almost. So they didn't build that for the Windows 10 PCs. They only built it for Windows 10 Mobile.
I mean, you could run Android they could have, obviously. Yeah. And in fact, I've often wondered why you can't run Windows Phone apps on Windows. It seems like this would be a fairly easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the army we're going to war with. Yeah.
No, it makes sense from a business point of view. From a user point of view, it's disappointing. But, hey.
And for the people on the team, it's disappointing.
Well, can you imagine how they feel? They did too good a job.
Well,
right. Congratulations.
Well done.
Now they work on Islandwood. They moved some of them over to Islandwood.
You know, but that a lot of that has to do with not. I think it's just easier to do because Android itself is running on a VM,
right?
And so it's much easier to do that for Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's probably not technically impossible, but it's probably legally impossible to run iOS apps on a Windows phone because of Apple. So, which is understandable, and so it's a more technical approach. I mean, right now they're not talking at all about doing anything Android. It's just iOS. And I suppose you can make the argument that if for most places, maybe Google accepted, but if you are a software development house that has an Android app and an iOS app, the iOS app probably is nicer. I mean, even today in some cases. I don't know. I think the Google stuff tends to be pretty close across both platforms.
It's going to be interesting to see how they you know, into the same blog post they mentioned Xamarin, right? And Xamarin's technology lets you use C# to build apps for Android, right? You can use .NET
and
C#, right? Yep. So, you know, how they explain this to build and how they kind of reconcile what they're doing with Xamarin and the .NET platform with the universal Windows platform is going to be interesting, how they actually set that up.
They're
not the same, right? I know.
No, in fact, they go in different directions, and so
they do.
Xamarin is a way for Windows-based developers to be able to now target these popular mobile platforms, and so it's kind of a neat expansion of their capabilities. And then, of course, the bridges are ways to bring other apps in the other directions.
But as we mentioned last week, you know, is Microsoft going to try to start talking about the universal platform instead of the universal Windows platform?
Right. Right, exactly. Is Xamarin a step toward this notion of universal apps actually being universal? I think that's inevitable.
I think so.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to wait till build to find out about the bridges.
And by the way, you know, it's funny because a lot of what Jeffrey said earlier kind of ties into this stuff. Mm-hmm. He talked about, you know, we don't care if you're in Windows in the VM. Like for us, the way that Azure gets paid for it is based on what you're doing.
Mm.
It doesn't matter to them if you're running Windows or Linux, right?
Right.
Running universal apps on other platforms, it doesn't matter to Microsoft as long as you're using their platform.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the same type of rationale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
And we have one more piece of Windows news that we should do before we get to Paul's favorite segment on Xbox.
Oh, no. We have a lot more.
There's tons of Windows news here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about the Windows Defender Advanced Threat Detection. Threat Protection Service. Wow, that's a mouthful. Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection Service, which Microsoft announced. Detection.
Not protection, just detection.
Well, because it isn't protection, it's literally after the fact. And and again, Jeffrey sort of
talked
about something.
You should be clear about that. No, that's good. I don't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the actual name of the product is Protection.
Right.
Protection.
Is it
Windows Defender advanced threat protection.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But,
I wrote it
wrong. But you know what? You're what right. you're saying is right. It's a post-breach service, right? So it's weird that the protection is the name and not detection, because what it does do is detect threats, right? And so this is a new service they're building that insiders are going to get sometime soon to test as part of Windows 10 Redstone. It uses machine intelligence to kind of look at what's going on your network, on machines on your network, and compare it against a database of threats mixed in with expertise from security folks all over the world. And it kind of looks for patterns, is my understanding, right?
Yeah, behavioral patterns.
Behavioral patterns. We don't know which versions of Windows 10 Redstone this will be in, but it sounds like an enterprise product. Not
yes, it does. I could picture being pro or enterprise, but yeah. Enterprise only, possibly.
I would guess they would sell it as a subscription, and it would cost you something, or at least you'd have to have software assurance.
I think, they were really cagey about the cost.
They were, yeah, but it's coming soon. They announced it at RSA this week. So that could be pretty interesting as that moves ahead.
The funny thing about this, I guess, is they have a bunch of companies testing it. And a bunch of those companies actually found they had threats in their networks that they didn't know
they
about.
Did? Really?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Yeah. Well, it works.
Mm-hmm. Another happy customer.
It does work. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So we got Raspberry Pi 3.
Yeah, that's exciting. We got Father Robert got one.
So 64-bit, slightly faster processor. When the initial announcement doesn't mention Windows 10 anywhere, and I got a little nervous because with Pi 2, it was very explicit. You know, this was part of the
deal. Yeah.
But Microsoft came out a couple hours later and said, no, they're going to support it.
It's not the full version. It's like a different version, right?
It's the IoT. But it's not just the IoT version. It's the insider preview of IoT. So it's a pre-release version. I hadn't really followed this too closely, but in the year since the Pi 2 shipped, Microsoft had updated Windows IoT Core, it's called, for the Raspberry Pi to support things like Raspberry Pi's own wireless networking add-on or other people's wireless networking add-ons. And this one, I think, actually also includes Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built in. So that's another advantage. But, you know, $35. It's kind of a fun kit computer. You know, you can get your own cases. You can do a little HPC with it. You can do all kinds of neat things with it. And it's, you know, the developer tools are free. The OS is free. The box costs $35. You just need a screen, a keyboard.
It's so great. I love the Raspberry Pi. And now this is, you know, even better and better. $35.
Yeah.
And really the way to think of it is as a full computer. You know, it's not really in any way not a full computer, except it's not as quite maybe as fast as a desktop. But now it's faster and
it's
1 gig of RAM, so that's a lot. But it's interesting that Windows IoT runs well in 1 gig of RAM is interesting, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a stripped-down version. It does run the universal apps, so you get that stuff.
It's nice.
Yeah, so, yeah. This is like the, you know, the Commodore VIC 20 days, you know.
Every kid should have a Raspberry Pi. And, you know, you could use it as your desktop computer, really. It's good enough.
Yeah, and just learn it. Just use it to learn.
But, boy,
you know, control the robot.
Microsoft gives away a copy of Minecraft with it that is programmable. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's kind of a special version of Minecraft that you can write software for and forth and learn how to program. And I think that's a great gateway drug for kids.
Yep.
I really do. Turn them into programmers.
I do too.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
And then
encourage it.
Eventually they'll turn 13 and discover girls and it will be over. But, you know, it's...
Yeah. Some of us didn't do that. Some of us never discovered girls. Sure. Much to our sadness.
And now they're in this building somewhere, toiling away on
The people now have moved to Redmond.
Driving up the real estate prices.
And a new wireless display adapter.
Yeah, this one, the jury's out on this one because the previous version of this device was literally the best Miracast dongle you could get, the Microsoft wireless display adapter. And I had problems. I got this, and I've had some latency issues, especially with Windows 10 Mobile. I brought it out. I'm staying with Raphael. Raphael is the source of my "this is the best version ever" because he does very detailed tests of all of these dongles, and he's been having problems with latency. He's been trying to measure how well this thing works, and so I guess we're going to have to hold off a little bit on whether or not this is worth getting. But they basically just changed the design a little bit so that the dongle part that sticks into the HDMI port is smaller, so it will fit behind TVs better. And Microsoft, actually, interestingly, the only thing they said about it from a technical perspective is that it would, in fact, offer better latency than the previous version. But so far, that hasn't proven to be the case, at least not with the one I, the actually, we have two units. So the ones we've tested so far, that hasn't happened. So I threw that in the notes, but you might want to hold off on the new one until we can figure that out.
Very good to know. Let's take a break. Come back with more Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. They're in Redmond. They're at the on the Microsoft campus. Anybody we should thank from Microsoft?
Yeah, we should thank Alex Vaught for helping us set up Jeffrey Snover. Vaught.
Yes. He just kind of abandoned us here.
You know what? This is crazy.
We could run amok in this building right now, Leah. There's no one watching us.
Wow. I was going to say this on the show today. This is the new Microsoft. They didn't follow me to the ladies' room when I was on campus this week.
Yeah.
And you know what? Wow. It sounds like a joke, but that used to be what they used to do.
What you didn't see was the little miniature drone that was following you.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah, they no longer need to follow you, if you know
what
I mean.
Yeah,
so we could bolt out of here and, like, run down the halls.
Well, you know what, Mary Jo, since the next two segments are Xbox gaming and HoloLens,
yeah.
maybe you'd like to take this opportunity.
Maybe I should do that.
Just go frolic.
I was going to bring a poking stick so I could keep her awake during the Xbox.
No, I'm going to be awake on the HoloLens one.
Good. Yeah, I am too. I'm very interested. Yep. But first, a word from our sponsor, Squarespace.com, the place to make your next website, the place I made my website, leoville.com, and I'm so glad I did. First of all, you can't bring a Squarespace site down. And in this day of DDoS attacks and sudden spikes in user interest, it's really nice to have a server that just responds by throwing more bandwidth at you, and you wouldn't even notice. Every Squarespace site is quick, fast, no matter how many visitors you have. So Squarespace is ready for your success. It's easy to create a beautiful professional website for your business, your portfolio, if you're a photographer or an artist, a designer, if you're an architect. Squarespace really is the place that the beautiful people make their beautiful sites. But also for a restaurant. I mean, you could be a plumber, an electrician. Everybody needs to have a place on the web that's theirs, not some Yelp listing, but I'm talking about your own site. And I'll tell you, when I do business with anybody, I go to their website. And what's nice is every Squarespace site has built-in e-commerce. So if you want to sell online, it's simple. The online store follows your design. So it's not like an ad, you know, some sort of extra add-on afterthought. It's part of your design. It's part of your look. Squarespace really is fantastic. I want you to try it today. And by the way, you don't have to be a developer. You don't have to be a, you know, you can do everything you want on a Squarespace site. You start by picking the template and then making your site, and it's all point and click. But if you are a developer, they have a developer platform that is second to none. Full control over the HTML, the CSS, the JavaScript. You get a full JSON API, so you can take content from the Squarespace CMS and massage it as you will. You can start with one of the existing templates. That's nice because it's fun to see this great engineering behind these beautiful designs, including things like mobile responsive design. Or you can just start with their base template from the ground up. Once you register as a developer and flip the developer toggle, you can even use Git or SFTP to upload your files. Start coding with Squarespace. Love Squarespace. You get a free custom domain when you buy an annual purchase. And you're going to want to, because we're going to get you 10% off that first purchase. So here's the deal. It's free to try. Go to squarespace.com and click the, you know, get started button. But if you decide to buy, we do ask that you use our offer code Windows. That way, I know there are many offer codes in the world. No offer code is like any other. Our offer code is a special little snowflake. And for this show, it's Windows. So use the offer code Windows. You get 10% off, and then they'll know it's Paul and Mary Jo sending you. Squarespace. There's no question. You should. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley in Redmond for Microsoft's first annual virtual TechNet conference. Mary Jo did her hosting duties yesterday. Paul will be as soon as this show is over. But meanwhile, they've brought back lots of news, including a really great interview, I thought. If you missed the beginning of the show, rewind. Because Jeffrey Snover was fantastic. talking about PowerShell, the father of PowerShell.
I thought we had had him on before. That's so weird.
Maybe.
I think you're confusing him with Mark Rusinovich.
That's me.
Well, yes. I mean,
we've had Mark on a couple times, but we had never had Jeffrey. We had talked about having
Jeffrey. He's a legend.
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
So, HoloLens. It's getting hot in here. I'm putting on my visor. Everybody, the Vive just went on sale. The Oculus Rift is coming in a few months. Google, clearly interested in this. Apple started hiring big names for their VR. But Microsoft kind of has this amazing AR product. A little expensive to get the developer kit. People keep saying, you're getting it right. You're getting it right. And I'm thinking, $3,000. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are they shipping out the developer kits yet? I know I can order it, right?
They'll be shipping them out. Yeah.
March
30th.
Well, this is March. 30th. So soon.
Yep. Very soon. Yep, so now we know what's in the developer kit, which we didn't know.
Right.
You get the HoloLens goggles. Then you get the developer environment. You get the Bluetooth clicker that we talked about last week to help you do that AirTap a little more easily. You get a carrying case, a charger, cable, and don't forget the microfiber cloth and nose pads, plus an overhead strap.
Yep.
All in your nice little carrying case. It's all
for
there.
Just $29.99 if you order right now.
What's the development environment like? Visual Studio, I would assume.
Visual Studio. Yeah. Yep.
And then there's
so you get a license for that?
Yeah. You get you know what? I mean,
anyone can do this. Anyone can do this. I mean, you don't need a HoloLens. There's going to be an emulator that ships on the 31st or whatever. They already have all the developer docs up.
There's a thing called Holo Studio, which we've heard about before, which is for creating 3D and 3D. They have that as part of the developer environment, right?
Yeah, it's like not quite a proof of concept app, but the apps that they're providing are designed to stimulate developers about what's possible. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So there are three new sample apps. I think games, right?
Some games.
Yeah. Some games. And they gave us all the specs for the HoloLens officially. So we did
so you
know
get one?
That. Me? No.
No, but Raphael's ordered two of them.
Has he really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They acknowledged publicly that the battery life is 2 to 3 hours of active use and 2 weeks of standby time right now.
And shocker, you can leave it plugged in and use it tethered.
Oh, can you?
Which is how which is how it should have shipped to begin with. Like, they're going to let you.
I didn't catch it. Oh, well.
Yep.
Yep.
I will say this. You know, I've talked a lot about Google VR and how awesome it is and how inexpensive it is. And one of the things I really like about Google VR is this Google Street View thing where you can, you know, go to Rome or Paris or whatever. Yeah. You can walk down the street and it's, you know, you're there. It's amazing. Yeah. But those things are mostly still images. There are actually some video bits, but you can't really move around in a huge space with video. It's basically just still images. One of the things they talked about, which is one of the few HoloLens demos that we've actually not had, they never showed us this, is a Google Street View type thing where you're standing in a space. It could be, again, Rome or Paris. And the objects that are there in the room with you. So if there's a cafe table at a cafe outside of Paris, you can walk around the cafe table and look down and around at it, and it's there in the space. And that's a big difference, I would say, between VR and AR, the mixed reality thing. I mean, that kind of shows you the potential awesomeness of this kind of solution.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. The objects in the room are there with you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I mean, seriously.
We're not ready for this.
No, that's amazing. I mean,
that's the thing called HoloTour, right? Is that thing?
Yes. Yeah.
What would happen? Okay.
What would happen if you got hit by a car?
Amazingly enough, even though I'm not wearing a visor right now, the objects in my room are with me. But my real question is,
I'm not talking about objects in your room. I'm talking about.
I know, in the VR. I understand. But what happens if I walk into the object? I mean, is it really with me or?
No, of course not. But I mean, the point is, it's realistic. And one of the things that's really nice about AR is the way it tricks your brain into believing that things are there. So if there's a little, you know, comic book character sitting on my laptop deck and I look at it from any angle, it stays in the right place, so it becomes real in my mind. And so if you have an AR object in this space that would be maybe, like I said, a cafe table or a car or whatever it is, it becomes real in your mind because of the the realistic portrayal of that hologram, yeah. for lack of a better term. I'm not even sure if they're really holograms, but whatever it is, these virtual objects.
So, but if you're maneuvering, mm-hmm. it's not going to ruin the thing if you accidentally, you know, you swipe it and it, well, it's...
Well, yeah, you could walk through it. There's no doubt about it. But think about, like, the Mars thing we did, where yeah. you really are – if you're in a big room like this one, you can walk 10 feet in that direction, walk 10 feet in that direction. And you are walking 10 feet in this mixed reality environment. Yeah. And so this room has a table in it, but it could be just an empty room. The things that are in it, you know, virtually are these holographic displays. And it's yeah. – they are things you can walk around, and from every angle they will seem like yeah. real things.
It's a, that's, you know, VR. I mean, that's no different from VR. The difference is that the actual room you're in is also present.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes.
So what you described is a VR experience. Yes, of course.
In right. VR, you can see everything around you. Like in the HoloLens, you see the table. Okay.
You still right? see so your actual table.
I've not. So this is one demo I've not had. I guess what I'm saying is if you're yeah. – there are actually exceptions to this. But for the most part in Google VR, Street View VR or whatever – you're just kind of going down the street, and you can turn and look at a building on the street, and you can kind of zoom into it, but that's kind of the extent of it. There are cars there, but it's just a photo. The whole thing is just a photograph, so it's kind of a 2D experience, yeah. really. I think the point of this is we talked really early on, you know, a potential use for HoloLens would be a HoloLens tour of an apartment that you might rent or a home you might buy, or in this case, it would be a place you may want to visit on a vacation. You go into a travel agency or whatever, or I guess you would do it virtually from your own home if you owned it, and they could put a HoloLens in your head and say, well, this is what the Parthenon looks like, or this is what the Roman Colosseum looks like, and you could kind of experience it.
Yeah,
and it's
but
a
that's
little
VR.
More than a...
That's not AR. That's all you're, well, what you're really telling me is that HoloLens does VR as well as AR, because everything that you just described, that's Oculus Rift does that also.
No, I understand that. But but you don't walk through the environment with an Oculus Rift.
Yeah, you do. You just haven't done it. Play a game in Oculus Rift. There's people moving around you. You're in an environment. You're in.
No, I'm saying
it's not like you're thinking of Google Street View or something. It's not like Street View. It's immersive. There's a table in front of you. It's in front of you.
Right, but you don't walk into it. Physically walk.
You could. Why couldn't you? Of course you could.
Okay.
You're just describing VR, Paul. You really are.
No, I'm not. But I'm not.
Well, you'll have to explain how it's different to me. I don't.
Because the room can be part of it. In other words, you could be in a pretend vehicle driving around Paris or whatever, and that vehicle is something that's in the room because it's a stage thing for this demo or whatever. And it is mixing yeah. the reality of VR. I don't know.
That's AR is mixed reality. But if I'm touring an apartment in New York, mm-hmm. the experience is identical in VR and HoloLens, it sounds like, because I'm in the apartment.
Okay. Well,
right?
I guess what I'm saying
you're not saying, this table is physically in your real space is going to be in the apartment.
Well, it would be if there's a table in the room. It is in the VR. In the
we'll have to turn that off for my tour of the apartment.
Well, you don't want to turn it off for your view because you can walk yeah. into it. It's still that's
another.
The point.
Let me try the view of the apartment is just a small thing that you see in the room here. Like the whole room isn't the apartment. Like you still
yeah,
see there are chairs
VR.
And here are tables.
Yeah.
No, it's just it's like you're seeing this in a small like self-contained
it's a small
space,
view right? VR. Look, if that's what they're selling, they're missing the boat. AR is all about the first thing you described, where the physical reality is augmented as opposed to I am in a space like an apartment to take a look at the apartment. That's VR. And if it's this way, it's crappy VR compared to the full 360 VR that other VR helmets give you.
I think we're trying to say the HoloTour thing is just one kind of
app. Yeah, I understand.
App.
It's one app. It's a VR app, not an AR app. And if HoloLens is important, it's because it's augmenting existing reality as opposed to giving you a virtual reality
tour.
Yes,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
I don't mean to be obtuse, but it didn't sound like – if you're saying to me, oh, you can go to an apartment and look at it, well, yeah, and I could do it better with a cheaper device.
Okay, sure. That's
right?
Fair. Yep, yep.
Not with a postage, not with a mail slot.
I'm not suggesting this is why you would get it. I'm just saying it's one of the apps that comes with it. It's the one or two. Well, I haven't tried some of the games, but of the actual non-game apps, I think it's the only one I haven't used. And That's all.
They would do well to promote the augmenting existing reality side.
I'm pretty sure they are, in fact.
That's their main thrust with this, is showing the augmented reality. But I think they're trying to show you, and you could do some of these other things too. That's how I took it.
It's interesting, and the reason that's an interesting distinction is because that shows they have ambitions in virtual reality as well. But they're going to have to increase the field of view to compete with the...
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I mean, Vive is $800, and that's expensive. The Oculus Rift is $599, and it's everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not this.
Right.
So that's all.
Yeah.
But it's important, and people need to know the difference between AR and VR. There's a significant difference.
Yep.
And I like what Microsoft's attempting with AR, but it's a lot harder to do, and that's why it's less, right now, less extreme.
Yeah, definitely harder to do.
Yeah, much.
Right.
And there's apparently competition from others. Somebody just sent me a link to Meta 2, which is a... another augmented reality headset that doesn't have the male slot.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to make demos, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I some of the demos that we did, especially on that first time, are truly unbelievably impressive. Like really, really impressive.
Yeah, but they weren't real. Oh God, they've got Ohanian and Scoble promoting it.
Now you know they're screwed.
Now it's trouble. Yeah, you know, this seems like this is, but it is AR, and they're doing the same thing Microsoft did, which is showing a full view augmented reality. Now, if they can do that, that's impressive. I'm sure it's connected by a big fat wire, right? Well, this is actual footage shot through the glasses. So I don't know how it's working, actually. As you see, there's a little bit of a constraint on the
edge.
So what's the uptake, do you think, of the demo? Have they talked about that at all, or the pre-release?
Yeah, they haven't really said how many people are in the first wave getting it.
Yeah. To be clear, there's a process, right? You have to apply. You have to explain what it is you want to do with it, and then they will choose you based on whether it makes sense or whether it's something unique or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yep.
Obviously, Raphael put in his thing. It's like a Throt.com mm-hmm. HoloLens app, so instantly accepted.
So it's not merely enough to wave a $3,000 bill at them.
Yeah, well, they want real apps, right? I mean,
right.
they want... Yeah.
Right. All right, well, that's good. That lets me off the hook, because I would just be playing with it as a toy.
Yes.
Yeah.
As would I.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm getting a lot of pressure to buy one.
Sure.
Oh, Leo, we won't know. But it's not... I think the most important thing is people are still thinking of this as a consumer product you're going to get.
Yeah, it's not.
I know.
It's not.
Yeah. Not any time in the near term at all.
No, and it's not even the type of thing where you could say, you know, I wear it and I do whatever I do with it. And I say, well, Mary Jo, you might want to look at this thing. I can't give it to her. You have to calibrate it to the distance That's between true. Your eyes. I mean, it's a very technical thing. It's not a, it's not like a cardboard thing. You just pop it in, you know, look, there they are. It works. It's not like that. And so it's unclear, you know, how this thing will be as a consumer product, assuming that ever happens.
Dr. Max is raising one distinction between existing VR headsets and what the HoloLens mm-hmm. would do. In existing VR headsets, your movement is done not by you walking.
That's what I said.
But you'd run into the wall.
Oh, but that's what I said.
Yeah.
Right.
Like with VR, it's a you're virtually walking through an environment. You're walking, you know.
You're doing something to make yourself walk.
In AR, you can walk around in the environment. That was what I was trying to say.
But you in which case you would want to see the rest of the room because there's stuff. You don't want to walk into a wall.
But in that case, what you would really want is for the rest of the room to be empty. In other words, if you were in a virtual
So
cafe,
a realtor would bring you to an empty room and say, here you are.
In a Paris cafe.
In your Paris cafe. Yeah. But don't sit down on that because it's not a chair.
Well, they might have a chair, I mean, like a green room style cube or something you could sit in that would be like sitting in the chair. The thing has spatial sound, so you could hear the sound of the people, the clinking of glasses around you. It'd be a very realistic effect, assuming you kept your eyes forward there, because it does have that mail slot thing. But
yeah, I mean, and VR could do that, but they very wisely decided that that would be risky since you can't see what's going on. You could just fall right over your coffee table.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's better to use a mouse or a joystick or some other motion way to move yourself around so that you actually are just sitting there. Okay. All right. Now I get it. Yeah. Now I get the distinction. Yeah. Xbox.
Finally.
The real news, the meat of the matter. We buried the lead once again, Paul.
Actually, I could probably get through this pretty quick.
Don't rush. That's all right.
There was an event in San Francisco a couple weeks ago that I was actually invited to, and I didn't go because it was just hard to justify 11 hours in the air to look at some new games. But they basically showed off the what they're calling the spring lineup, you know, like you would have at a fashion show, for Xbox One and Windows 10. There's some crossover here. I think the big stuff is Gears of War, which just came out for Windows 10, which is a store app. It's the first DirectX 12 game, I think.
I like how you look at me for
example. I know.
I'm like, me?
She's already, it's like I'm on the Titanic and she's already in the water in a boat flying, you know, driving away. there's a free version of Forza coming to Windows 10 soon. I think that's... Let me see where the date is. I can't find the date, but I think it's happening soon. And that's, you know, we'll do 4K DirectX 12. That's kind of awesome. There is an update to Minecraft on Windows 10 coming that will support Oculus Rift. And by the way, that Minecraft thing we did that first time with HoloLens was one of the most awesome demos ever. It was great. And I bet Minecraft with Oculus Rift will be really cool. So this, you know, obviously there are a bunch of other games. I don't really need to step through all the games, but there, you know, this stuff is happening. There's some new Xbox One features coming in April. So if you're on the preview program, you can get that stuff now. I believe starting today, there's also an update to the Xbox beta app on Windows 10 that delivers a lot of these new features as well. But I think the biggest one for me is the ability to browse and buy Xbox 360 games from the Xbox One. And what you'll see in the store is the games that, of course, are compatible with Xbox One. I'm surprised that wasn't there on day one. But that's coming. And I'll update my console when I get home because I'm, you know, it'll update for me. I'm away, so I haven't had a chance to look at this. And I mentioned Gears of War. I got this early, and I installed it on four different machines. All of them are kind of portable machines. I can't get this thing to work. Like the Tomb Raider game that came out about a month ago works fine on laptops. You know, you scale down the graphics and everything. But Gears of War is a beefy game, and for me, it basically just crashes when the game starts, and I can't get it to work. So I need to get a better PC, I guess, to make this thing happen. And actually, that's most of it. So see, that was quick.
That was good. Nice. Yeah. What? Oh, and what's happening next week in New York at the New York store?
Oh, so the Tom Clancy, I think that's the Tom Clancy game. Does that sound right?
I think it is too. Yeah.
So Tom Clancy is the Division. This thing, it's funny. It's described as an open world action role playing game, which is not quite the sort of strategy shooter description I would expect of a game with Tom Clancy's name on the front of it. I guess they're launching it March 8th, which is next week. Yeah. So it must be in New York. Is that Tuesday or something?
Next Tuesday.
Coming? So,
you coming in New York?
I wasn't planning on it.
Okay.
I could be convinced, but if you promise to go to the store with me, I would I would consider it. But it's a new Xbox One game they're launching next week, and they're going to have a live event in New York right at the store, Microsoft store.
Will Clancy
Major
be
Nelson
there?
Will be there.
Oh,
Page.
Nice.
Yep.
I'd rather see Larry Herb.
In fact, he may be there too.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Let's take a break and then the back of the book. You know, those things that we do. The fun part. Tips and tricks and beer. First, a word from ZipRecruiter, the folks who helped us hire. Well, I don't want to say who, but people. ZipRecruiter is a great way to do your hiring. Here's the deal. You go to ZipRecruiter.com and you post your listing. And immediately your listing is going out to all the biggest job boards, 100-plus job boards, plus Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, Craigslist. So your listing, you know, right away is is going to everybody, and that you want that because you know you don't. There's that one person. Let's just say there's like the one perfect person for you. Do you know where that perfect person is? Do you know which job board they're on? You don't. So ZipRecruiter lets you get to the most people fastest. Plus, they will immediately match your posting, your listing, to their almost 6 million current resumes. So almost instantly, you're going to start getting people applying for that job. And not just applying to the job. They're going into the ZipRecruiter interface. They don't go to your inbox. They don't go to your phone. You don't get calls. In the interface, you can quickly screen through the employees. You can rank them fast. And they've designed this because they know you're going to get so many candidates that they want you to be able to find the right one fast. It's really remarkable. That's why more than 400,000 businesses have used ZipRecruiter. Much better than going to an individual job board or 12 job boards. You're going to 100. And you got the interface. I mean, it's so sweet. Dan is a ZipRecruiter client, heard about it on the show. He said the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is you have to spend the extra time recruiting when you're short-staffed. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates all in one place. It's everything I told you about. And I want you to try it free right now for 4 days. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. You got a 4-day trial waiting for you. That's probably enough to hire. The right one's out there. It's a question of using the right technology to get the right one. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and it's time for the back of the book, starting off, I think, with Paul's tip of the week.
Too many windows open on screen. So Microsoft added Cortana support to Microsoft Health, which means that you can now use Cortana to check out your daily fitness goals, which you collect with your Band 2 from a Windows 10 PC or tablet, a Windows 10 mobile handset, or an Android or iPhone handset. So regardless of which platforms you're using, you can actually get this stuff sort of through an indirect route, right, from your Band 2 to Cortana. And all you really have to do is just go into Cortana, go into the notebook, enable Microsoft Health integration. It's just a checkbox. And once you do that, you'll see when you bring up the Cortana interface, you've got, you know, your stuff that's happening today, tips and tricks, et cetera. And then there's a Microsoft Health tile that has the number of steps you've taken so far today, which for me is actually fairly horrible right now, so we're not going to discuss that. The number of calories you burned, and then it compares it to yesterday's, and then you can click on it and it launches the health dashboard at up on the web. And so it's kind of, you know, another way to see this data from any device that you have, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
And
nice,
yeah. Just as a side tip, because I'd like to remind people of this, it is the beginning of the month, and that means that there are new Xbox games with gold offerings available today. On the Xbox One, there's a Sherlock Holmes game. Actually, that's all there is right now as far as new game. Sorry. Well, because the second one is for the second half of the month. And then on Xbox 360, it's Supreme Commander 2 today through the 15th. The one I'm actually kind of excited about, because I've never actually played this, and I know a lot of people are really into this game, is Borderlands is going to be free on Xbox 360 starting on the 16th. And so I'm kind of waiting for then so I can go grab that. That's supposed to be a fantastic kind of shooter, you know, shooter puzzle game, I guess I'd call it. Shooter.
It's fun.
Strategy. Yeah. Kind of like really neat looking cartoon graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Software pick of the week. You know, I've been in a kind of a Call of Duty mode for about 10 years. So, you know, and actually I texted my son today to tell him to please install the new map pack for Call of Duty Black Ops 3 when it is released tomorrow so that it will be waiting for me when I fly home. But I've been meaning to check out different games. I was talking to Raphael, and he's really into indie games in particular. And he turned me onto a game. Unfortunately, it's not available on the Xbox. But there's a game that just came out on on Xbox One and on Windows 10, made by an indie developer. It's called Oxenfree. Huh. It's I just grabbed it last night. I played the beginning of it, and it's kind of a cool looking side view. It's kind of like the old like the King's Quest games, much simpler. I mean, as far as interaction, you know, deciding what to do and what to say and all that kind of stuff. And it's basically three teenagers go to a mysterious island. Weird stuff
Scooby
happens.
Doo.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's a really really cool game. The game that he turned me on to, unfortunately, is not available on Xbox. So I sort of have a second pick. There's a game called Firewatch, which you may have heard of. It's available on the PS4, and it's also available on Windows, but through Steam. And this is kind of an interactive adventure type game. It's a first person view, awesome graphics. Not in the sense that they're realistic. They're kind of flat and cartoonish looking, but really really neat. And really what this game is, it's basically all dialogue. I mean, you do navigate around an environment and things happen and you have to go see what those things are. But kind of a mystery builds. And your life has kind of gone south. You become a fire watcher. You're up in one of those platforms in the woods somewhere. And you're on the walkie-talkie with another person who's a fire watcher. And she's kind of letting you know how the job works and what happens. And then these mysteries start occurring and the action kind of unfolds from there. This is a really, really cool game as well. And I wish there was an Xbox One version. I guess I'll probably have to grab the Steam version because I've been playing it on his PS4 in his apartment, but I don't think I'm going to be going PS4 for this one. But it's a really, really neat game.
It looks interesting. So it's mostly puzzle.
Yeah, yeah. And just kind of figuring out what's happening. You know, like right. there's a... It's kind of a growing sense of mystery and weird stuff happens. And there's like a weird person is kind of looking at you down from the top of some rocks and you go up there and he's gone and, you know, the fires happen. And it's just, it's a really cool experience.
Wow. Well, it looks like fun. Yeah. Gave me two games I have to try now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both great.
And that one's available on Mac too. That's nice. Weird that it's not on Xbox One.
I don't know why that is.
Time for the Enterprise Pick of the Week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yep. I'm going to give TechNet VC one more plug, and I'm going to let people know, because I think we get this question a lot yesterday, that all the content from the 3 days this week that Microsoft's recording is available for free on Channel 9 to watch on demand. So day one of TechNet actually has some really interesting content, the kind of content that we don't cover. Paul and I don't write about this a lot, but we get a lot of questions, a lot of career advice stuff for IT pros. So they had a headhunter on. They had James Whitaker, a distinguished engineer at Microsoft, who talks a lot about the future. So a lot of really good stuff that you don't normally get on typical Channel 9 videos. Day two, which is where Paul and Brad are doing their thing, is a whole day of Windows 10 content and Intune content. And day three is going to be all Azure. So this is all free. Anybody can watch it anytime. The day after they record it, all the videos are up on Channel 9. So it's definitely worth it if you just want to get all kinds of fun, free content to look at.
It's a real nerd fest over there.
I think this is the best way to do it. Now, there's not a live audience, right? You're just in a studio.
No.
Right, right.
Yeah. This is a really good way to do it, I think.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm going to keep asking to do a second take. I don't
can
feel
I
like
that
I did that too well. Yeah, can I, this is recorded, right? I can just do this.
Take two. Cut.
You don't get live recording, do you?
Shout cut. We used to have a host on Tech TV who the show was kind of live to tape because they always did it like with minutes to spare before the actual broadcast time. So, and he knew that editors and the directors would never allow him to do a second take. So he would just swear a blue streak so it couldn't be used.
Oh, yeah. And we had one speaker on yesterday. I won't name who this was, but they were like, oh, we should get the blooper thing ready. And they were right. And they said, oh, well, maybe when we post that, we'll bloop out a few things.
We do that. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Works good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Code name of the week.
Okay. You guys need to help me figure this one out. The code name of the week is Seville. Mm. And Seville was the code name for this new Defender Advanced Threat Protection Service. So why do you think it was Seville? I couldn't figure that out. if there's any significance, or they just picked a city because they use city.
Paul, do you want to, or should I?
Because it's hotter than hell. No. It's Seville.
Oh, no, it's not Seville. It's David Seville, the leader of the Chipmunks.
That's it. Of course.
Yeah, of course. And this is a kind of a chipmunk protection utility.
Here we go. That's got to be it.
Rodents from eating your stuff.
Sure. I like his answer rodents. Better than mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the other cool thing is there's a second bonus code name as part of the Windows Advanced Threat Protection Service. I wrote about this thing last year, and I didn't know what it was. It was codenamed Sonar, Project Sonar. And I said, Microsoft's building this thing that's a malware detonation service. And everyone's like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And it turns out this is part of...
They specifically used that term, detonation, which I'd never heard before.
The detonation chamber. So if you're using this new threat protection service, you're going to be able to, if you see a suspicious file, move it into a VM.
Instead of a quarantine, they call it a detonation chamber.
Yeah. Right. I said to Terry Morrison, I'm like, why do you always have to be so violent?
So
but I don't think he understood what I was saying.
No, you put it. You move this file from your machine into Microsoft's cloud and a VM in their cloud, and then you detonate.
It's like the bomb disposal unit puts a little container around it.
You need a little robot.
Yeah. So that was Project Sonar, and I asked Terry Myerson too. I'm like, so is this Sonar? And he said, you know what, Mary Jo, you know a lot more code names at this company than I do.
That's good.
And of course she does. She's all about Microsoft.
That's right. That's my job.
And all about beer.
Yes. So we didn't even talk about our meetup this week.
How did that go? I saw a picture. Looked like
fun. It was fantastic. So thank you to everybody who came to the meetup, and thank you to Postdoc Brewing in Redmond for having us. If you've never been to Postdoc Brewing, it's really close to Microsoft's campus, and they have some fantastic beers. Paul and Brad and I all started our night with one particular beer that we all liked. It was a Brett Barrel Gozer with pineapple. So what is that?
Oh,
Gozer
my.
Beers are... they're kind of like Berliner Weiss beers. They're made with salt, usually a little bit of salt, a little coriander, very light, easy drinking beer. But they use Brett as part of this beer. And then they have a little pineapple added, too. So I didn't taste a ton of pineapple in it, but it was very nice, really light, refreshing.
It was slightly, almost like a sour.
It is like a sour. Yeah. The Brett makes it sour. So if you go over to Postdoc ever and they have this beer on, you definitely should try it. But our meetup was great. And what was really great was we have to give a shout out to the Windows team because they came out in force to our meetup. Terry Myerson came.
Wow.
Don Box, the elusive Don Box, came and he did a trivia giveaway for us at the event. But we had all kinds of people from Microsoft and lots of Windows Weekly fans. So thanks.
What a great group. Terry Myerson was there.
Wow. I know. He was. Yep.
Nice. Did he answer questions and talk to people or just kind of stay in the corner scowling?
No, he
looked right.
Nice. I even got my picture with him and Gabe and Don. That was like, okay, the rock stars all in one picture. That's awesome. Nice.
Well, and of course you drank beer, local beer.
We did.
Yep.
That was fun. Yep.
Brett Barrel. Is that goose or ghost?
Like Gosa?
Gozer.
Gozer. Oh, it's German probably,
Yeah.
Gozer, the brewmaster. Mm-hmm.
Nice. It's the type of play, you know, when you're in the presence of beer nerds. I think I said, I'll try the goes, and she said, okay, one goza, and you?
I'm sorry, Paul. You got that wrong.
All right. Well, and so you're not done yet. You're going to work. You're not flying home tonight, I hope.
Tomorrow.
Oh. Yeah. Is it rainy?
It poured.
It rained constantly.
Oh, and not just the usual Seattle rain. It poured so hard last night.
You should look at the picture I put up on Facebook. It's insanity. Like, I have come here so many times, and I never see rain like this. And it is just, every time I walk outside, it's pouring.
Yeah. It's been bad.
That's what it's supposed to be like.
That's what people think it's like, but it usually is not like that. I don't think.
No.
My experience.
No. Stay dry. Have a nice beer.
Yes.
And good luck.
Thanks.
Later today.
Yeah.
With your closing
remarks.
They're
going to be great. They're going to be good. It'll be entertaining to see Paul and Brad.
I'm going to tune in just to watch.
I'm going to try not to keep it too infantile, but it's probably going to be a little infantile.
Not going to work. Yeah. Well, you got the props, right? I sent you the giant mallet, the fright wig, all that. Okay, yep. The rubber chicken. You got all that. Okay, good.
I'm just waiting for him to talk, and I'm going to pull out, like, the Terminator gun while he's talking. Sarah O'Connor.
We're never inviting him back.
Yep, that's the goal.
And we're working still on April 1st. That's going to be our live broadcast from San Francisco from the Build.
Good news about that, right?
I'll give you guys a little. I can't give you the final, but yeah, Microsoft is totally, I think, going to hook us up on April 1st, and it could be really even more awesome than we thought.
Well, we have an event, a live event producer now, so I presume you're in touch with Colleen. So instead of me just remembering to tell somebody. We actually have a person.
Yeah, she's on it already.
Yeah, she's great. And I think she's meeting with Larry, and they're going to get everything all lined up. And
so if you're coming to Build, try to stick around Friday afternoon and evening.
Will I need a badge to get in?
We'll take care of that.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will I need to wear clothes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You will.
Long pants?
Maybe.
I could wear shorts.
Shorts is probably San Francisco.
April Fool's Day. We'll find something funny to do. All right. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on Twitch Live. You can watch and participate in the chat room. Ask questions on the Twitter. But if you can't be here live, on demand, audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv/WW or wherever you get your podcasts. All those famous podcatchers, the Twit apps, Stitcher, Slacker, you know, Groove, all of that stuff. You know, this show is everywhere you are. So please get a copy. In fact, get it every week and you won't miss an episode. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.